Welcome to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I am your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. I am thrilled to announce our 2025 virtual MTSS Summit happening this December. This two-day event is all about MTSS innovation with intention, where we will dive into bold ideas and practical strategies to ensure every student is supported and every educator is equipped to succeed. Join a international community of educators and leaders to explore how intentionality and innovation can drive meaningful change in MTSS implementation. You won't want to miss this incredible opportunity to connect and grow. There are many misunderstandings and misconceptions about special education and supporting students. And one of those is that students are likely to misuse or take advantage of accommodations. So today we have our friend Ashley Pinnell, who's a member of the Branching Minds team and a former assistant director of special education, to chat about this myth and misconception. So welcome back to the podcast, Ashley.
Thanks for having me, Larissa.
Well, I love tapping into your knowledge and your experience about special education, and I thought that this was a good myth to ask you to chat about. So let's kind of just start with the basics. Why do you think this myth about accommodations being misused is persistent? Like, where does this come from?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it did come up a lot in my work as a special education leader and as a special education teacher, and just trying to constantly have these conversations with people around equity versus fairness. And I really think it comes from or stems from just this persistent misunderstanding around what an accommodation really is and how providing accommodations to students is actually providing them access when they wouldn't have otherwise been able to, access the curriculum or complete a test. But it's not about giving them unfair advantages. So I really just think it's like we're not providing the right knowledge to people to understand what these things really are. And I think that it just persists overall because we have this misunderstanding. Just repeating
myself.
I think
the knowledge, well, no, you're right. I think it's kind of around the knowledge of what is an accommodation and why would a student need that, right? Because I think about it, you know, that idea of leveling the playing field. I had someone explain that to me early on in my career of if a student has, say, dyslexia, and you give them some kind of tool to help them, you know, you're leveling the playing field. You're helping them access learning that they would not otherwise be able to access without that help. It's almost like if you're injured and someone provides you, if you hurt your leg and you get a crutch, you can walk and you can move about. And otherwise you wouldn't have been able to if you didn't have that help.
Yeah, and so, that's the example like I always use. It's like a student, if somebody broke their leg and we had to provide them a wheelchair or crutches, it doesn't mean that they're never going to learn to walk again, right? They're not going to just like be like, oh, well, this is great. I'm going to use crutches for the rest of my life. But it's just leveling that playing field so that they can access in the time being while they're getting those skills back up.
Yeah. And I think that you brought up an important point in that of just that sometimes those accommodations are temporary, right? Because you're helping them build a skill like with a crutch, like you're helping walk until your leg feels better. But in some cases, students may have a lifelong kind of, you know, hindrance to learning. And so they always will need that. It's almost like glasses, right? I think that's also a good way to think about it too, is the idea of like, you know, unless you have fix something, you know, you need glasses to be able to see. You may not always need glasses to be able to see. But I think that idea that accommodations isn't, you know, students have to maybe in their maturity learn to understand of why they have that accommodation. Because I think maybe some of the misunderstanding is students may be not taking advantage of, but like there could be cases of students
misusing their accommodation or not using it, or it could be a behavior issue and not a learning issue.
Sure. Yeah.
And so there's situations that sometimes that, because misconceptions come, I think, come from somewhere or from some experience too. And so, or a student who gets a accommodation, but that actually wasn't an accommodation that works for them. Mm-hmm. And maybe they needed a different.
Yeah, that's absolutely accurate. Yeah, I think always, I mean, anytime you hear of something that's a myth, right, and you're trying to debunk it, it's always coming from a place of misunderstanding, poor education, we're just not providing people with the right information to understand what we're talking about. And I think with accommodations, I think there are a couple like really big misunderstandings that exist, and they are the reason why people are confused. So one of the biggest ones to me is that, and this always came up in discussion when we would be writing IEPs for students, is that we would be having these conversations and teachers or parents would be saying, well, I don't want to provide that accommodation because I want to keep the expectations for this child and what they're expected to learn really high. We're not talking about an accommodation doesn't change the expectations for the student. It just removes those barriers so that they can show what they know. And so along with that, I think sometimes there's this confusion around an accommodation versus a modification.
And yes, I was going to ask that.
Yeah, like a modification is a change in what we're expecting the student to learn. But an accommodation is a change in how the student learns or demonstrates their knowledge. So if we're not changing the standard at all for what that child is doing, but just providing them access, then that's an accommodation. And I think that's a really important distinction to make. And so we would have those conversations in meetings around, if we read the directions aloud for a student, has that changed what we're expecting them to learn or output? Are they still able to demonstrate mastery of the skill in the way that we're asking them to? And so I think that that's a huge piece of it. And then like, another one I think comes from like, we think of these accommodations and saying, if we provide this, then the child's not going to try hard, right? But that's not really accurate. It's again, it's helping them to be able to put in the effort so that they can show their knowledge, that they can demonstrate their knowledge. And so, you know, unfortunately, I think, like you said, it always stems from a place of probably something happened in the educator's career where a child did misuse. And then you're kind of trying to overcome that one instance that has now been applied to every instance and saying like, that's not the norm. This is the norm. This is what we would expect our children to be able to do when they're using these tools to be able to share their knowledge or access the knowledge that they are, access the learning that they need.
I think it's really, I mean, I don't know how many times I've sat in a meeting and we've talked about the difference between accommodations and modifications. Like, and I think there's still sometimes people are like, wait, let me ask again, what is the difference here? And I think sometimes they've been used interchangeably.
Sure.
And I think that that's so an important distinction. I appreciate that you sort of broke that down. And I also think that, like I said, sometimes those misuse of accommodations happens when there is some sort of other thing, like a behavior skill that's missing, misunderstanding on that student's part, or how that accommodation is provided to them. Like there's something, it's not the accommodation itself, but there's something else around it that maybe causes for that. But I think it's easier to blame on, well, they just, you know, they get help, or they get too much help on their, you know, test or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like when you're having those conversations with parents or educators around a student's dependency on an accommodation, I think that's really important to have that conversation around what's our plan for this student to be successful. So what's our plan in teaching the skills the child does need so that they don't have to have a reliance on an accommodation? So one that, you know, came up a lot in one of the schools I was working in, because we had a high level of students with dyslexia, was they would use either speech to text technology, or we would do read alouds for them. And this was because they did not have the ability to read the text, right? And that's stemming from a place of they have a reading disability, but they also had an IEP in place with services that were training them on how to read. So the goal would be that they learn how to read, but in the absence of them being able to read, we still wanted them to demonstrate that they have an understanding when they are listening to text. They can answer questions about text, specifically in math, right? Like, it's not our goal when we're looking at math for a child to be able to read the math problem. The goal is for them to accomplish the computation. So reading the math problem is just giving them access to be able to demonstrate their ability. They don't know how to read, so we have to provide them with a bridge to do that. And our goal then is still to have that support in place, teaching them to read so that eventually they can do that on their own.
Yeah. Well, I like that you use the word bridge, because I do think that that sometimes is helpful to think about too. And I think a lot of times, you know, when I've sat in IEP meetings, it's about, okay, what are the goals for the students? And if they've reached those goals, then maybe we don't need that accommodation anymore. Because I was in the middle school level. And so we'd often talk about, you know, if they're transitioning to high school, is this an accommodation they still need? Or is this something they had in elementary, but now they don't need that? And so the idea isn't that it is for forever, but it is for as they're developing those skills. And if they've met those goals, that then maybe that they don't need that as much. And so I think that that's an important kind of point.
Yeah, there has to be an evaluation process of, like, you know, at least yearly, like, we are evaluating, are these still necessary for the child to be successful?
Yeah, I think, yes, I think that that is really important to think about, is that in the misunderstanding of around special education, I think that that idea of, like, we meet the plan is to help students. And so you meet to talk about, like, do they need to continue? And I think, I mean, that's something we talk about with MTSS too, right? Like, those interventions aren't meant to be forever, but they're meant to be things to help students gain the skills they need to be able to reach standard. I think with IEPs and with special education, it's more of that this student has a diagnosed disability and they need more than what we provide on another level. And so I think that, you know, it's not just a simple intervention to gain the skill and they're back to normal, but it's more of a little bit of a longer term thing. What would you say to educators and parents that are worrying about that accommodations might create a sense of dependency and reduce that student's motivation to try? What would you say to that?
I think it would just be like kind of all these things we've already kind of talked about, which is just that making sure they have an understanding of what an accommodation is. So describing what an accommodation can do and helping them acknowledge that it's not a tool to lessen the standard, but rather to allow them access or to demonstrate their knowledge in a different way. And that our goal is always for us to evaluate that, you know, does the child continue to need this? And that we're always going to have a plan in place to help them build those skills so that we don't have to have this dependency on this tool. Like you said, I mean, I think it's really important when we are having conversations with parents that we do acknowledge kind of like both components, right? Which are our accommodations that are likely to be in place a little bit longer term because of, you know, some challenges that maybe we can't overcome or we can't overcome as quickly. And then we have ones that are shorter term to help us, again, just bridge that gap until we can help the child build the skills necessary.
Yeah. And I think it's a continued conversation. I think with every stage that the student, like we talked about, is like in elementary, accommodations may look different because of the environment versus middle school, you know, because we would have that conversation with students as they're, you know, having that first IEP in the fall of their seventh grade year and realizing there's certain things that were offered at an elementary school that is like, we don't have that here. So what does that look like? How do we help them? And, you know, with that, their case manager, their special education teacher, like, what are the things that they're working on? So it was always really important to continue those conversations and to record, you know, like how they're doing with the different things that they're offered and to reexamine them. So, I mean, and that's that's protected. I think with special education, that's really important that's protected for them. And so there's a lot of like, case law and different stuff around special education, particularly around accommodation. So it's just not, sometimes I do think there's that misunderstanding that some educators have that it's just like we willy-nilly give accommodations to students. But no, it's more like there's a lot of evidence behind that before we just, you know, provide those things.
Yeah. And when you're in those meetings too, I think like it needs to be such a deep conversation that you're having around each of these things. Cause I do think it's fair to say that our educators in their experience might have had kids show up with an IEP or a 504 with accommodations that are just like this lengthy list. And it's a little unfair to our educators to say you have to do every single thing here if we haven't done our due diligence in a meeting to discuss what is really important for that individual student. It shouldn't be a plan that has pages and pages of accommodations for a student, but rather really personalized accommodations for that child to be successful, to be able to meet the standards. And so for our educators who have experienced that, they're like, why am I going to look at these pages and pages for a kid? They're coming in blanket for us. Everybody has the same ones. And it's too much. It's overwhelming for our educators. And it's not realistic. Like our students are not going to use accommodations in that way either. So it is really critical that when IEP teams, 504 teams are having these conversations about accommodations and what a child needs, that they are careful to identify things that are really specific to that individual child in order for them to grow and be successful in a classroom.
Yeah. You know, and I was just thinking about it, you know, as I was thinking about this topic, and I was thinking through some of like just my years of teaching and how, you know, important it is to involve the students in those conversations too, especially as they grow and mature. I think really, because I think that's where some of those misuse of accommodations happen, right? Yeah. When you don't have the conversation with the student of like, hey, this is why we are providing this, you know, it's important for you to give feedback. It's important for us to understand whether this is working for you. Like just having that as they grow and have more understanding is to involve them in the conversations.
Yeah, they know themselves the best, right? Like they're going to be able to say, this really works for me, especially when they're in middle school. This is a tool that works for me. This is a tool I really don't need or I don't like. And so if I don't like it, I'm also not going to use it. Or maybe I don't understand how to use it to help me achieve. Yeah. So, you know, again, it goes back to that education component as well. How are we educating not just our parents and our educators, but our kids on how they can use these tools?
Yeah. And I think in middle school, the other part of that is as they like, they're sort of more aware of their peers, that accommodations is really important to talk with the student about, because I even have students refuse accommodations, even though they needed them, because of the way it looked. And so making sure that those conversations with students and being respectful of their sort of individual choices, but also going, hey, not trying to single them out in different ways. It's just really such a fine line to work with students at that age and how they interpreted the help that they were provided. So I think that I appreciate having this conversation, because I think even if we talk about MTSS interventions, some of this stuff still applies in the sense of involving students in the conversation about why they receive interventions, why they receive help. It's maybe at a different level than it is with an IEP, but it's important to talk through if a student is receiving an intervention for something, it's providing them another skill. I think with accommodations, it's more about removing the barriers for them to access. I wanted to go back to that point because I think it's having access, making learning accessible. Yes. Is really important for students that have a learning disability, because if you think about it, they're just standing like on a track and there's like barriers in their way to like being able to run forward. And so our job is to like, can we remove some of these barriers so that they can easily access what their peers might be able to access?
Yeah. We're not reducing the content or the rigor that we have, like the expectations still exist, but we are trying to break down the barriers for these kids so they can get there. You know, it's just not realistic to think that if a student has a disability, that they're going to be able to perform at the same level of their peers. But I also think it's really relevant, going back to something that you were sharing about, you know, the the stigma that our kids have around accommodations and around like using tools that make them look different from their peers. I think that goes into kind of what kind of class, like what does our classroom setup look like, right? So like just thinking even more broadly than special education, but how do we create a classroom environment in which all of our students and their individual learning styles and their strengths and their needs, like everybody is celebrated and appreciated in a way that makes them feel like it's okay if I have to use a tool to be able to share my knowledge. It's okay, you know, for me to do this. I'm not going to have anyone making fun of me because I know that in this classroom environment and in this school that we are all appreciated and celebrated for our differences. And there's no stigma around me being able to do that because I'm working towards growth.
Well, and that it's okay to ask for help. It's okay that I need other people to help me. I think that that's a really important part of removing that stigma, that it's okay. Yeah, it's okay that everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. And so again, that goes back to just like how you talk to your students about needing help and, you know, presenting that information. So this is such a great conversation. And I think so needed to talk about some of these misconceptions, because I think it can be really helpful. Hopefully this will help our listeners, even if they just provide this to their teams, of talking about what the difference is of, you know, if we can help you, you know, inform your teams, or it's presented in a different way rather than you just saying it. So thank you, Ashley, for being here and just chatting about this as always. So glad.
I was happy to help, and I'd love to come back anytime we want to talk about anything special education. You know, it has my heart. I love working here at Branching Minds and supporting our teams with MTSS. But at the heart of the things that I've always done in my career is just to help all students be successful. And so anytime we want to chat about it, I'm happy to.
Thanks for listening to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn @branchingminds.